Welcome back to the History of Rock Remix Edition here, where we're talking a few different things today. We have, we're going to cover the Taylor Hawkins tribute here at the very beginning. We're going to get to the Chappelle Show. We're going to talk about music and movies, and then we're also going to talk about five fast questions before we get to any of that stuff. His name is Shim. He is the rock star.
His name is Brandon. He is the DJ.
Class is in session.
Let's get to it.
Sean. All right. So really quickly here, we just want to cover the Taylor Hawkins tribute. It was all over social media. I mean, obviously me working in rock radio and having a lot of friends that are also Foo Fighters fans, this was kind of like the big thing, which was interesting because it was technically like the opening day of college football.
Like this I didn't know that.
Yeah. So these two things. So you could definitely tell who was fans of what because I had all of my rock fans and
friends. Was there a little bit of fighting for supremacy on the social feeds there?
No. But that does remind me of. I can't remember if it's like the VMAs, I think is what it, what the battle was constantly between, where the VMAs would air at the same time as like opening week Sunday night NFL football. And it was and that you would actually get people arguing, like, why would you care about the VMAs? They don't even play music videos anymore. Why would you care? Just shut up and watch your football. And like there was like battling going on there. No, this one, it was really just if people were watching college football, they're posting about that. If people are watching Taylor Hawkins, they're talking about that. All kinds of amazing guests. I didn't watch the whole thing. I believe the whole thing clocked in at like six, seven hours.
And I heard that and this is the thing, when I started watching it, I didn't understand why they had chosen a lot of the people that were on it. But then I realized they had actually, which it's correct me if I'm wrong, they structured it that they had all of Taylor's favorite artists playing Taylor's favorite songs. Like the Foo Fighters used to cover a lot of these songs for fun over the years, and Taylor would come out and sing them. Because he was a great singer, and also it's a ball, you know, like, hey, we've got 20,000, 40,000 people in front of us, we'll play a Queen song, or like, you know, songs that you never would have thought, like pop songs from the 80s and stuff, that these guys are like, yeah, they're having a blast. And so they got out members from Queen and members from the biggest bands in history just to be like, yo, we're just going to jam because everybody loved Taylor.
Yep.
No one didn't fucking like Taylor. It was really beautiful.
Yeah, the two moments that, again, I really skipped through it. And it sucks, too, because it was available on MTV's YouTube channel, and they promptly took that thing down. Like, that night, I was trying to show my wife some of the clips. I couldn't find it.
Right.
So when I went to the link that I'd watched before, it was, this thing has been, this thing has
so
been
wiped.
So
where is it? Where do you find, where can you find it now?
I don't know where you get the whole thing. I think maybe Paramount Plus, think.
I heard it was on Paramount Plus, and that's because it's a paid service. They're popping it up on there.
Yeah. But
so for anyone that wants to check out the full thing. Yeah.
So the two things that really stuck out to me, it was obviously Dave Grohl coming out to times like these, breaking down while singing that. That is one of the toughest sons of bitches I think I could ever possibly imagine, him being able to go do that. There's no way I could. I mean, first of all, we'll ignore the fact that I can't fucking sing. But even if I could, there's not a chance in hell. I mean, that like it was heartbreaking, and there's no way. Like the fact that he was able to get through it and do it and fight through the tears, impressed the hell out of me even more with Dave Grohl.
Well, I think I watched it on stream, and as I was watching it, I started to get choked up, and I'm like, if I had to do it. If I literally was asked to sing that song for someone who I didn't know, I would get choked up. To be your best friend and then do that song, knowing that he's there in that concert. He's hanging out side of stage being like, yeah, this is awesome. This is exactly the sort of party I want to have.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm sure they felt him and it was beautiful. But yeah, there's no, the only thing that I could think of was a long time ago when Elton John did the song at Princess Diana's funeral. And I remember him saying, I actually had to switch off to sing the song. I walked on stage and I felt myself kind of leave my body because I wanted to do justice for my friend. And everyone asked, well, how did you get through that song? Because he did a phenomenal job singing it. And everyone expected Elton John to choke up. But Dave Grohl, it almost would have been weird if he hadn't.
Yeah.
You know, but it was beautiful. And then, of course, the second highlight was Shane Hawkins, Taylor Hawkins' kid, came out and absolutely dominated My Hero.
Yeah, he did.
He played the fuck out of that.
Did you see him almost jump the gun a little bit, though?
On which part?
At the very beginning. So they bring him out and he starts to on the sticks, and then Dave kind of like, wait, like, hold on.
He looks at him, he's like,
hold on.
No,
yeah. He's like, not yet. Like, hold on. Like, you could tell, like, that just, he was there, and call. It was just, it was so cool watching this. I even put together a short this past weekend to kind of coincide with this, because I had stumbled upon a story that Taylor Hawkins was basically invited to join Guns N' Roses years ago.
Yes, I saw this. Yeah.
And it got to the point where he didn't know what to do. The band was over in London supporting There's Nothing Left to Lose, I think was the album that the Foo Fighters were supporting. Some dude from Guns N' Roses calls up asking for him. He wasn't quite sure what to do, so he ended up calling Roger Taylor of Queen.
Yeah.
And Roger Taylor Roger Taylor flat out told him, hey, this is you've got a special thing with Dave Grohl.
Yeah.
Like, don't like, this is not something that money can buy. Make sure that you're like, I'm imagining it was kind of a way of him saying, don't leave without saying, don't leave. You know, like he was really,
the thing you have here
is really, really special.
He's been, and that's one of the best people to talk to as well, because he's been in the situation where he had one of the greatest lead singers in the world and the band split for a while. And when you have some years apart and you go, damn, and you try to do a few other things and you go, my God, I was in Queen and I chose to leave. Maybe I can, and luckily they got it back. But if he's coming from a place of like, dude, you got one of the best singers in the history of rock and roll and you love each other and it's a good situation. Don't, grass ain't greener. Like you might think it is, but he's like, I can assure you from experience, the grass definitely
ain't
greener.
This is as green as that grass is going to get.
Yeah,
so.
It's literally like,
If you get a chance and you haven't watched it yet, I would recommend the Foo Fighters are obviously the ones that wrapped it up. I mean, it was a who's who of celebrities out there performing. So if you get a chance, check it out. But moving on to really the first topic that we were going to be covering today, it has to do with Chappelle's Show. It's going to be turning 20 years old coming up in January. It debuted January 22nd, 2003. Chappelle, he's obviously constantly in the news for his stand-up, people trying to cancel him. Remember, there was the whole walkout with Netflix and stuff like that. So I thought, what a perfect time to talk about Chappelle's Show. So the first thing that we do when we talk about stuff like this is, was this a thing in Australia?
Oh, no. Well, here's the weird thing. Chappelle's Show wasn't a big thing in Australia, but I wasn't in Australia really at the time. But I was already over in the States when Chappelle's Show had come and then gone. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I heard about Chappelle's Show was from the guy that played drums on Dressed Up as Life. And was that the
I'm Dehydrated guy?
No. Don't forget about that. For anyone who's wondering, go back to the old stories from Rockstar
101 with Shim. Yeah.
But basically, I heard the story all after the fact, but it's one of those simple things. Dave Chappelle's humor is specifically African American based. It's all from the point of view, and it's got a lot of jokes from that. It's mostly based out of that culture. We don't have that culture in Australia. We didn't understand any of the references, so it didn't connect in Australia. But when I was in the States for a couple of years and people introduced it to me, once I've been living there for a couple of years, like, oh, I get this. I get that. And then I got and I had it explained to me. I learned a lot about the differences in African American culture and the problems that they have from Chappelle's Show. But it wasn't because I was raised ignorant. It was because I just had just fucking landed.
Yeah, nothing like that. All right, so let's kick this thing off. You got the first one here.
Okay, so this is what I find fascinating. I didn't know half of this stuff that you're going to find out from the show notes. That the show was originally inspired by Hugh Hefner. Chappelle watched a special on Hefner that was designed to resemble one of Playboy's parties. Hefner would interview musicians and comedians, and then they would perform for Hef, some Playboy bunnies, and for other guests. So Chappelle called his half-baked co-writer Neil Brennan to plan it out. By the way, huge fan of Neil Brennan.
Neil Brennan is awesome. I follow his stuff on social media, and he's brilliant. He's absolutely, absolutely brilliant. So HBO originally passed on Chappelle's Show, and this led to one of the kind of as a real quick little snippet. It wasn't a full bit, but HBO's ads at that time were, it's not TV, it's HBO. Like, kind of saying that they're bigger than TV. It was like Sopranos and stuff like that, and all these major shows that they had going on. So the thing with Chappelle is he walks out to the Comedy Central logo and he goes, it's not HBO, it's just regular ass TV. And it was like, it was just, it was so, it summed up just the brilliance of the humor where HBO passed, he's able to make a joke at that.
Yeah. No, he's, and I remember thinking, he talked about that in one of his specials or one of his YouTube things, that, and it really does go to show the tone of the entire entertainment business. He went and pitched Chappelle's show exactly as it was. It's a genius idea. And because he wasn't yet Dave Chappelle as we know him, HBO just looked at him and said, well, what do we need you for? We could just take this idea and do it ourselves, which they were going to do. And they tried a version of it that sucked. And they did a pilot, and then Chappelle went to Comedy Central and actually made it work because, yeah, what do we need you for? Because it's fucking Dave Chappelle. Chappelle and Brennan learn how to write for the show by reading, live from New York, the complete uncensored history of Saturday Night Live as told by its stars, writers, and guests. That's fascinating. But so, the next one that you've got is what I really want to get to.
So Wayne Brady, he was a huge fan of Chappelle's show, but when Paul Mooney made the comments... White people love Wayne Brady because Wayne Brady makes Bryant Gumbel look like Malcolm X. See, this was my, like, it's interesting where you learn of certain people. Like, I was not necessarily familiar with Paul Mooney up until Chappelle's show, and he was,
no, neither was I.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
But this comment, it did upset Wayne Brady, and when Chappelle found out about this, he called up Brady, and that led to the sketch with Brady in it, where he's like, is Wayne Brady going to have to choke a bitch?
And I don't think there is a single Chappelle show that does not have a absolutely timeless t-shirt slogan on it.
Oh my God.
There's not one episode. The amount of, I'm rich bitch, I'm fucking, is Wayne Brady going to have to choke a bitch? And then I'm Rick James, but they all have bitch.
Yeah.
I'm Rick James, bitch. They're all bitch at the end of it.
So, remember where the show started, the first sketch. Was the one about the blind black white supremacist.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that was, you could not, if there was, I want to say if there's one sketch that would sum up the Chappelle show, it's that one. I mean, that's kind of simplifying the brilliance of the show, but that shows you the brilliance of that sketch. It was so good.
Yeah, but have you ever actually heard, it's funny, I actually love Chappelle and I've watched a bunch of interviews with him. Have you heard when he actually broke down his reason for pushing that to be the first sketch?
No.
The reason for it was actually very calculated because he said, we had all the ideas. We thought, okay, we could put that sketch in the middle, at the end, at the beginning. We went, no, we'll put it at the end because everyone's going to watch the first one to pass judgment. They're all going to go, do I like this or do I not like this? And he basically was like, you know, there's no way that you're going to watch. What's the guy's name again? The character that's
Dave
the
Chappelle.
White supremacist? No, the character dickhead.
Oh, God.
Cletus. Yeah,
no,
yeah, yeah.
No. No, because my brain really went to Tyrone Biggums, and that's not him. That's not that character.
No, that's another amazing character that Dave Chappelle came up with. In the chat, when you like and subscribe on this video right now, ladies and gentlemen, on YouTube, go ahead and type
Clayton
in the
Bixby.
Chat. Clayton Bixby. The reason they put it at the front at the very first one of the episode is because they said, you're either going to like Chappelle's show or you're not going to like Chappelle's show. You're not going to be able to not make your decision. And he said, we wanted to capture all of the people that were going to like and love this type of humor from the get-go. We didn't want them going, oh, I like this one sketch, but not as like, if you don't like it, bounce, and we're going to lock in the hardcore fans that we know
and
are going to love
it. And it was hardcore fans,
and it worked.
Man. Yeah.
And it worked because the people who, and it was brilliant because the people that didn't like it said, I can't believe this shouldn't be on TV, more publicity. And the people who loved it were like, I have to see the next episode. I have to get the DVDs. I have to talk about this. It made the show infamous and famous at the same time. And it was their strategy. It wasn't a mistake. They went controversial on purpose to lock in their hardcore fan base, which was mostly African-American people that were like, finally, someone that's saying the shit we keep thinking. That's literally, he was like, I'm targeting my people.
Yeah.
And he said it 100 times. So they were originally going to use actors for some of the other roles like the Sam Jackson beer bit, but they didn't want to rely on someone else to capture their vision. So Chappelle ended up playing the part.
And again, another one of the absolutely brilliant. I'm just going to stop saying it because I could just constantly say every single sketch that comes up, it's a brilliant sketch because I could say it about this next one where they filmed the racial draft skit across the street from Jay-Z's final concert. Like, that's how that was being billed at that time. So RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan, he disappeared for like an hour, and they delayed production of that episode because he was gone because he had gone across the street to see Jay-Z perform.
Which is perfect. That's exactly what you'd expect. In the Knee-High Park sketch, they were originally going to have Bobby Brown, but this didn't work out. They also reached out to Andre 3000 and Pharrell. Q-Tip ended up saying yes. So which one was the Knee-High Park
sketch? That's the one that looks like Sesame Street with the puppets.
Ah,
and they have Stinky the Grump, which is
it
was Charlie Murphy voicing that character. And he talks about how, "I don't need you, honey.
It's coming back.
I'm going to beat my dick like it owes me money." Fuck it. Hilarious, dude.
I forgot about it. I forgot.
Speaking of Charlie Murphy, the Charlie Murphy's True Hollywood Stories idea came up while they were just having lunch, because he would tell these crazy stories about what it was like back in the day with his brother, Eddie Murphy, hanging out with all of these celebrities. And that's when Dave Chappelle's like, "We got, like, that has to be a sketch. We have to figure out a way to do this thing."
And the thing is, Eddie Murphy thought that the Rick James skit was genius. He watched the whole thing in silence, apparently, which is rare for Eddie Murphy. And once it was over, he said the word genius and told Charlie to just play it again, which is pretty much the highest compliment.
I fell into a black hole this weekend watching all this stuff.
I was going to say, I heard an elaboration on that exact story, which was that when it was finished, they all looked at Eddie to get confirmation, and he just turned around and was like, Rick was wearing a different set of shoes, but everything else was exactly the same.
On the couch. The couch bit. So on those Charlie Murphy, the Hollywood story. So Prince, he confirmed the story about him beating Charlie Murphy in basketball, but he claims it's not because he was that good. He claims it's because Charlie Murphy was really that bad at
which makes it even funnier when you think about it.
Dude, I'm going to keep getting distracted because my brain is going to keep going to the skits, and I'm just going to start laughing randomly because back then we didn't have streaming services. There wasn't Netflix, there wasn't Hulu, and it wasn't and TiVo was kind of a thing if you wanted to record something on cable TV, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But if you really wanted to enjoy Chappelle's Show, you went and bought the DVD, and you could not find the DVD. I looked for weeks trying to track this thing down, and I was finally able to buy it. My buddy Alan and I, and we decided between us playing video games, we were just going to marathon the hell out of it, and that's what we ended up doing. And I still have those DVDs to this day because I'm not letting those things go because they're that goddamn good. And especially with some of the issues that Chappelle has had, where he told HBO to take it down, and they did. They took it down because even though they owned the rights to it, they wanted to do it right
Netflix.
By him.
Netflix.
Well, and HBO, I believe, too. Like, he told
HBO.
All of them.
Oh, shit, okay.
He's like, take it down, please. And they did because it's Dave Chappelle. So.
Yeah. No, it was smart. It was a really. I remember when I saw it, and I had to eat my hat. I watched the video where he made the plan. It was a year and a half ago. He put up a YouTube special. He must have put advertising into it and got it out to everyone, and everyone shared it, which was him basically telling the story of the fact that because he pulled one of the most gangster moves in the entertainment business and left Chappelle's Show, he didn't breach his contract, so to speak. He just chose not to re-up. So they said, "We want to extend your contract. Here's $50 million." And he said, "Yeah, I'm choosing to not take you up on the offer." And they destroyed him because he basically shunned. He went against the grain.
Well, but remember,
the problem was that
they had filmed a third season, and that's when he bailed, because they would then have Charlie Murphy and Donnell Rollins come out. And so you know how in between skits he was in front of he was in front of the crowd.
Yeah.
They were the ones doing that because that's when he bailed.
That's
he
when he bounced.
Ship. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he never got paid. And they were withholding money from all the money that Chappelle's Show made for 20 years. He didn't get paid for because there was this breach of contract situation. And if that happens, Comedy Central owns the tapes. They paid for the recordings. And they go, "Yeah, well, we don't have to pay you." So 20 years later, he just went out and did the one thing that you never fucking do, which is told the absolute truth, threw them under the bus. Half the people who made the show were retired now, and he told the entire planet to boycott Chappelle's Show and said, "Don't watch it." He called everyone and said, "Do not promote this. Don't put it on your streaming services." And Netflix was one of the first ones where they said, "Hey, man, you just did a special for us. We made hundreds of millions of dollars off your special. Yeah, sure. Tell us what you want. We'll just take it down." And they took it down. Even though they paid for the rights to have it, they just removed it. And within a couple of months, he'd gone to Comedy Central and renegotiated and got back paid. And then now it's all up and everyone can watch it, at, you know, and feel good about the fact that Chappelle is getting paid again. That never, ever, ever happens in the entertainment business ever.
But you got to have the brilliance of Dave Chappelle to have some, like, to make something like that happen. There's a reason that that doesn't happen that frequently. It's because there's not that many people out there that are as good as Dave Chappelle. I mean, that's just the reality and of the situation. Yeah,
partly the actual quality of the content that he originally did with Chappelle Show, but then the way that he played it, he just bypassed, it's the second time, it's so gangster, he just bypassed the entire industry and said, I'll go to the consumer. When they stop buying, you'll stop fucking me. And they did. And they renegotiated. Anyway, so that was wonderful to go down the memory lane trip.
Yeah, and I fell down that rabbit hole this weekend as I was typing up these show notes and I was watching all the stuff. So here's what I want from anybody who is here on YouTube. Down below, obviously make sure that you're clicking like and everything else like that, but put in the comments, what is your favorite Chappelle Show bit? Because there's so many of them. The one that I gravitate to a lot is Black Bush. I think that
one's that?
That's the one where it's like, how would it be different if George W. Bush was black? And then it's Dave Chappelle as the president. And the one lady's like, you know, what do you say to people that are, what do you say to people who say that you're going to the Middle East for oil? And he's like, huh? Oil? Bitch, you cooking? Like, what are you talking about? Oil? And then he like, and then they all run. And it's just, so Black Bush, there's, I think you can find that on YouTube. And then
you can find all of them.
And then obviously the stuff with Charlie Murphy, the Rick James bit, where he's like, he would step over the line. He was a habitual line stepper. I don't know why, but that line gets me every goddamn time. So if there's a line or if there's a specific skit or anything, comment below and let us know which ones are your favorites.
Please.
As we celebrate your
Please party. Let us know. Yes.
All right. Moving on to the next topic here. A little bit of a discussion and some more stuff that people can get involved in if you would like down in the comments or if you want to hit us up on our social medias. What are some of the best and worst songs used in movies? And I've got a few here. Mostly mine are best, though. Like, I don't really have any.
I was trying to think of worst as well. And I don't know what it is, but I think that I've been really interested in talking about this with you because the ones that are the best, they actually trigger like an emotional response, and it makes you remember it even more. You remember the feeling of the way that the music and the picture work together. And if music doesn't work, you don't really make a point of remembering it unless it's like really, really, really like, holy shit, that's horrible. Yeah. Like they put a kid's music song over a slaughterhouse scene or something where it's like, that's a bad choice.
Well,
but that's been done.
Kind of interesting because mine, I wouldn't say it's a kid's song, but the one that always pops into my head is in the Dawn of the Dead remake, the one that had Ving Rhames in it, and Phil Dunphy from Modern Family, by the way. It's Richard Cheese in Lounge Against the Machine, Down with the Sickness. So if you're not familiar with Richard Cheese, he would take really popular songs, a lot of it rock songs. He did a great rendition of Baby Got Back, but it's all done in that lounge style. And kind of in the middle of the movie, as the group has sort of settled in on it, like being in the mall, like they've boarded up the mall and they're going through it and they're just getting comfortable with their living situation. It's that, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Your mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Like it just, oh, and then when he gets to the point where it's the ooh-ah-ah thing, he's all, oh-ah-ah-ah. Oh-ah-ah-ah.
I love Richard Cheese. I haven't thought of Richard Cheese for years. I haven't thought of him for years, but I listened to all of his stuff when I was 10, 15 years ago when I first heard about it. I was like, this is the most brilliant music that I've ever heard. But the one time that I can remember, especially recently, there's I know that it's a little bit more pop culture, but in Ragnarok, you know, Thor Ragnarok, when Thor finally realizes that he doesn't need the hammer, he can just shoot electricity out of his eyeballs and shit. When they drop into Black Dog by Led Zeppelin, it just is. I remember visibly, I was like, this is.
Was that Black Dog or was it Immigrant Song?
No, it was Immigrant Song. Totally missed that. My bad. But they did Immigrant Song. And I remember when the riff came in, I was like, it's perfect. It was a perfect blend. And you know the director.
Oh, wow.
And the thing that I remember thinking is that's $500,000 for a fucking riff. That license is one of the most expensive licenses in the world.
Dude, it's the MCU. Second one, if anybody's got the money, it's Disney.
So I got one more, but you go next. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, in the comments, let us know if you got a song where you like the best blending of music in a movie. Let us know in the comments. But go ahead. What was your next one?
My next one, it was Dropkick Murphys essentially setting up the movie The Departed with shipping up to Boston. True. Just it was so well done, and that was it was a perfect selection for that like not only that movie but also that moment of the movie where they're really it's right when they're getting Leonardo DiCaprio's DiCaprio's character. They're letting him know, hey, you're not going to officially be a police officer, but you'll be. You got to go to prison because we're going to put you undercover. Yeah. Technically, this thing doesn't exist. You're not going to get an official paycheck, but you will get paid under the table, tax-free. And then it kind of goes in, and it's playing while he goes through that whole process of being in prison and meeting up with some guys and then getting back to his life and stuff like that. It was brilliant.
We actually did a cover of that song on the Crucified tour for St. Patrick's Day. And I was so drunk when we did it because it was St. Patrick's Day that everyone told me afterwards, they were like, you made up the most random words. You couldn't remember any of the words. And I can't even remember. I made songs about getting fucked in the ass.
How do you screw up the lyrics to that?
Like, I don't know. It has four lines.
I'm shipping up to Boston.
Couldn't even remember that. But the,
were you like near Austin, Texas, and you changed the lyrics to Austin?
Yep, that's exactly what I did. the one that came to my mind was from Pulp Fiction. No, sorry, I shouldn't say Pulp Fiction. There's a lot of ones.
Oh my god, yeah.
But no, the one that's the best one out of all the Tarantino ones that I can think of is from Reservoir Dogs. Do you know the one I'm gonna say? So
here I am stuck in the middle with you, but he's cutting the cop's ear off, man. Oh.
Yeah, it's real. But that was, I think, one of the first. That was one of the things that made everyone look at Tarantino and go, this guy's going to go somewhere. Because the only person who had married music with violent images that well and that bizarrely was Scorsese. Scorsese used to put the most interesting music over horrific scenes, really mindfuck scenes. And that was a mindfuck scene. But he took it even further because it was such a happy song. And it's really ominous and it's kind of got a bit of a minor key. Oh, it's brilliant.
You totally just made me think of another one here. And it's going along that lines of where it's kind of a happy song with a really messed up scene. You go to Clockwork Orange. Yeah. I'm singing
Which one was it?
In the rain. And they're like old-fashioned ultra-violence is just some shit.
Yeah.
That was a good one. So there's a couple more that I have here before we get to five fast questions. And I've actually, amazingly enough, I've never seen this movie. This might shock you a little bit. But it's the Gary Jules version of Mad World in Donnie Darko.
Oh.
How I've never seen it. Like, it's something that should be right up my alley. And for some reason, I've never have. So it's going on my list towards the top of the stuff that I need to watch, and I do need to watch Donnie Darko, but that's one that a lot of people were mentioning that was kind of perfect and in line with the way that it set the scene, and it was perfect for the movie. And then my final one here actually was from a video game, and this one was from PlayStation 2. The video game was Twisted Metal Black, which I played through with my friends front to back. It's one of those games that has a lot of replay factor because there's different characters and there's a different storyline for each character. So you can play through with one character and then play a completely different game with a different character. There's also a cheat code so that you didn't take damage. So we could just play through it and not worry about dying constantly. And we totally did that too. But the song was the Rolling Stones' Paint It Black. And it was the perfect choice for that. And they're actually making, I believe, a Twisted Metal series that's going to be coming out here as well. But I mean,
like a Netflix series, like they're making a bit like a
Amazon. I think
Amazon. It's one of the big five. There's only going to be five streaming services, so whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, beautiful, man.
So
and
for
the
anybody,
only one, the only on. Last one that I could think of, please let us know is the which everyone agrees on. Please, by the way, let me know in the comments. Let me know if you're the one asshole that doesn't agree with this one. Is Hurt in the Logan movie?
Yeah. I don't know if I ever got to that scene, though. When is that?
No, it wasn't. It was at the, I think it's the outro credits, but it was on the trailer. And it was used in the trailer.
Yeah, see, sometimes sometimes there are songs and trailers that just fit so goddamn perfect. Yeah. I remember, I think it was Nine Inch Nails. Is the song In This Together? I think.
Yeah, I love that song.
And it was for the first Avengers movie.
Really?
Oh, yeah. If I'm remembering correctly, if I'm wrong, then correct me down below. I'm not going to waste the time Googling it right now.
Yeah,
if I'm wrong, let me know. That one always stuck out to me right there.
Questions.
There you go.
Five fast questions.
So, yeah, so if we missed anything, if there's anything else that you guys want to put down there, certainly let us know in the comments. But it is time for us to get to some five fast questions.
All right. I'm going to do it perfectly this time, Brandon. I'm going to be ready and I'm going to do it perfectly.
Shim's going to nail this thing. All right, here we go. It is time for five fast questions. Shim, you've got the questions. I've got the answers. Fire away, sir.
Number one, if you could listen to one decade of music, what decade would it be?
90s.
Number two, video killed radio star. What did the internet kill?
Civil discourse.
Number three, what do you like to daydream about?
Being rich and famous and having a lazy river.
Number four, what song is stuck in your head right now?
Valhalla Calling.
Number five, what's the best movie plot twist of all time?
All right. I think most people would say Sixth Sense, but I'm going to go with Cabin in the Woods or Usual Suspects. And that is five fast questions.
Very well done. And the lazy river needs to make an appearance in every five fast questions by the sound of it.
I am fucking determined at this point that I will get
a lazy river. We need a t-shirt. It's got to be a t-shirt for the History of Rock podcast with a lazy river.
And but here's the thing.
A little hut with Brandon on it that just, and a big fucking river. And all, there's just a little hut with food, and that's it.
Well, that's what I'm telling you. Like, the shirt, it's the river actually goes all the way around the t-shirt. Like, it's a true lazy river. It's not just some print on the front. It goes all the way around, covers your torso. It's the lazy river. I'm telling you, like, as much effort as we're putting into these podcasts and the shorts and the numbers going up and everything, I am goddamn determined to become famous enough to make enough money that I just can have a lazy river. That's it. Like, that's all I want. I mean, all the other stuff would be kind of cool, but if I can get a lazy river, I'm happy. I'm set for
that's when
life.
You know. That's when you know. I think it's interesting to be, for me, I look at it and go, if you get to the point where everything in your life is so paid off that your kid's college fund is put away plus insurance, you go, well, I really just have nothing else to spend money on. That's what a lazy river represents to me. It's like, wow, you really have got everything covered.
Yeah.
That you can buy.
Yeah.
That you can buy a lazy river.
I mean,
river.
Now, granted, I'm pretty sure a lazy river would actually be more on the top of my list than other things that, you know, I should be purchasing.
I love the fact that if you met someone who had a lazy river, you would never need to ask the question, you good?
I'd never leave their house. If I knew somebody who had a lazy river, I'd move the fuck in.
Yeah. You never need to ask.
I don't care if I don't like that person.
The answer is always going to be, I'm great.
Yeah.
I'm great. I got a lazy river.
I have a goddamn lazy river. And it's going to be designed like the Jungle Cruise from Disneyland. Like, there's going to be animals and it's going to have like foliage and it's just going to be awesome.
Foliage.
I don't know if that was the right use of that term. But anyway, so let's go through these five fast questions here real quick.
Well, if you could listen to one decade of music, what decade would it be?
It's got 90s. You've got some of the best hip hop, grunge, obviously starting the 90s, and then you had Korn with the new metal movement towards the end, because you would get, as we've been talking about Limp Bizkit on these episodes, you would get Significant Other. You would miss out on Chocolate Starfish because that was released in the year 2000.
That's a good point.
But I'm going 90s. So
you really do get the best of everything.
There. Yeah, you got STP in there. I mean, it's just, that was amazing.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think there's the most stuff. There was the most congestion of eclecticism within pop music, especially the fact that Korn and like was Destiny's Child doing its thing back then, or all those R&B girl groups that were really good. Mm-hmm. They were dominating the charts at the same time. That's never happened before or since. Yeah. And then the second one was a video killed the radio star. What did the internet kill?
Civil discourse, man. Like, for some ungodly reason, it's to the point now we can't just have a goddamn conversation. Because when it comes to anything, it's not about finding a solution to a problem. It's about being right. I'm right. My side is right. Like, when it comes to the political spectrum, fuck Republicans, fuck Democrats. It has nothing to do with politics. It's your team. Fucking admit it. Buy a fucking jersey that says your team on the front. Get a foam fucking finger when election rolls around. Because that's all it the fuck is. That's it. And so
number
that's
three.
Where civil discourse has been fucking destroyed.
Number three, what do you like to daydream about?
Yeah, baby. Just being rich, famous. No, look. Being rich and famous, that's a byproduct. I just want the lazy river. I'm assuming...
Wouldn't you rather just be rich and have a lazy river? You don't need to be famous. You don't want people bothering you.
No. Well, if I got a lazy river, it's going to be hidden. It's where I go.
So which song did you say was stuck in your head right now?
Hold on. But you got to admit, it is a little bit cool. Like, being kind of... Like, when you get recognized in public, like, that is kind of cool, man. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I don't know if I want superstardom where like people like, and I quite frankly, I'm never going to reach that level. But again, if I got a lazy river, nice.
I think it's nice to not have to wait in line. I just think that if you were the man who had a lazy river, you wouldn't leave to receive the perks of fame. You know what I mean?
Because you have a lazy river. Why would you leave your house?
Exactly. And what song was stuck in your head?
Valhalla Calling. I keep forgetting who the artist is, but it's the. It was really heavy on TikTok, and I can't remember the exact lyrics at the beginning. My kid's obsessed with that song, though. Like, I was kind of...
Is that why it's stuck in your head? That's why it's stuck in your head.
Well, I also created... Remember I told you I was kind of in a music funk? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. I created a new playlist today as I was working out. I'm kind of adjusting how I work out, and I'm like, I'm going to start, like, lifting heavier weights. Like, I'm going to get fucking huge. Not really.
Right.
And really. I'm like, I need music to get me fucking going because when your workout routine gets stagnant, it's like you just kind of go through the motions and then you don't see any change. So I created a playlist, and this is one of those ones where it's ships on vigor of the whales are skimming, bearing summons to the verdant plains.
So it's a sea shanty.
Yeah.
I did not see a sea shanty coming. There's
multiple versions. There's like a duet version. That's the one I listen to. There's a metal version of the song. Dude,
right,
I want to know, it's fucking amazing.
Is anyone else in the chat ever listened to sea shanty songs when they're working out? And if not, what do you listen to when you work out? That'd be funny if you got the kettlebells, you're walking around the gym, and you know how you see those guys got the headphones on, and there's a guy who's got some free weights, and he's doing this in between. He's like, he does that in between reps. And instead, you're going to be just like, oh, no, no.
Dude,
you're
going to
be doing the sea shanty up and down between the freeways.
When you hear that song, you'll understand why it's a great workout song.
All right. Okay, number five. What's the best movie plot twist of all time? I think most people would go to The Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense.
Right.
And that's why I'm like, Sixth Sense, but because there's two movies that I always have lodged in my brain that were just brilliant. And like Cabin in the Woods. For anybody who hasn't seen, especially with Halloween coming around, I cannot recommend
alert.
It enough. It's
spoiler
I'm not gonna
alert.
Well, I'm not going to spoil it.
I don't know what it is. Can you tell me? I don't know what it is.
I'll tell you when we're off. Like, because I don't want to say it here because I want people to go watch the movie. It's Joss Whedon. It's got Chris Hemsworth for crying out loud. Thor's in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah,
Thor.
That's a movie that you don't. Like what happens is not what you expect, and it's really good.
Okay.
And then on the flip side, a little uncomfortable mentioning this one just because of the whole Kevin Spacey thing, but Usual Suspects, man. At the very end.
I wouldn't have gone there at all. But yeah, I remember the first time I saw the Usual Suspects, I was like,
and he's walking away,
so satisfied.
And then out of nowhere, he's not limping anymore, and he gets in the car with the guy that plays the priest in the Romeo and Juliet fucking modern version.
Yeah.
I think that's
what it is. Oh, you're right. Yeah, it's a brilliant. I remember the first time I watched Usual Suspects. You got a great plot twist when your first instinct is, I've got to go back and watch the whole thing from the beginning again
to catch it all.
And that's exactly what happens. Exactly what happened with the Usual Suspects. So that was five Fox questions. Thank you very much, Brandon.
All right. Well,
and I think that brings us to the end of our episode.
End of this episode. Yes. And so coming up on Monday, we are going to be covering Limp Bizkit's Chocolate Starfish and Hot Dog Flavored Water. This is probably going to be a double episode. So you get part one coming up on Monday. But again, make sure you're checking out our social medias. I've had a lot of interest in the merchandise, by the way. I mean, I haven't done this in a while on this. We got the Brandalorian right there. We have Cross-Eyed Bear. And then we also have your straight-up History of Rock, which is right there. So if you go to VivaLaMocha.com, you can purchase your stuff right there if you guys want to check that out.
We will have a link. Link in the description, Brandon.
Linkage.
Will we put the link in the description?
VivaLaMocha.com. We'll put the link down below for you guys. And on that note, you guys have yourselves a fantastic rest of your day. Make sure you're checking out the socials, the shorts that Chim and I are doing. I got some badass ones coming up, by the way. When we're done recording here, because I planned a whole bunch out that Chim doesn't know about yet. I'll tell you once we're done recording, before we start doing the Limp Bizkit episode, there's stuff with Nirvana. Beautiful. Let me see here. Green Day, Nirvana, and more on Limp Bizkit as well for the shorts that Shim and I have coming up.
Yes, beautiful.
So you guys all have right. yourselves a fantastic day. And on that note, his name is Shim. He's the rock star.
His name is Brandon. He's the DJ.
Class dismissed.